Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host this week, Emily Seiberg, and this week, West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis is our guest. Thanks for being with us. You can call in your questions by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet a question. And our Twitter handle is @WBAAnews on Twitter. Mayor, welcome. How are you this afternoon?
I am really great, Emily. How are you?
I'm doing well. As you know, as we were just discussing, this is my very first Ask the Mayor. Normally, I'm the morning edition host. Feels a little funny to be behind the mic.
How do you feel about that?
I feel like it's interesting to be on the radio at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, I guarantee that, because one thing you probably are noticing now that you don't notice early in the morning is the vibrations coming from the construction outside.
I certainly did just notice that. Yeah. Being down here in the basement, you got lots of subterranean vibrations.
I was sitting here and it's, you know, this vibrations coming through. I thought, oh my goodness, are we going to have a problem with this radio program or what?
No.
How long have you been with the station?
I have been with the station since just after Thanksgiving of 2017. That's when I started. So I've lived in Lafayette under a year now.
Oh, wow.
The greater Lafayette area. Yeah.
What do you think of the community so far?
I think it's a great place to live. I'm really enjoying getting to know both sides of the river, as it were.
Good answer. What's your top three places in greater Lafayette so far?
I live close to downtown Lafayette, mm-hmm. so I really enjoy, let's put it this way. I love that the Wabash River is right there. It's
there
a beautiful place.
Natural body of water, yep.
I love the food and drink at the Black Sparrow. That's not awesome a plug.
Products.
That's not an advertisement.
It is a reality.
It is a reality.
And it is awesomely good, yes.
Absolutely. And I guess I would also say, as corny as it may sound, I've met wonderful people through my reporting while I've been here, and I've met wonderful, well-intentioned, great citizens, and I've really appreciated that part of living here.
Now, where are you from?
I moved here from Chicago.
So you're from the big world, right?
Well, I grew up in Indiana, actually, but I spent most of my adult life in Chicago. It's a little different down here, but that's okay.
Have you noticed, because my wife is from a big city. She's from Dublin,
mm-hmm.
Ireland.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And so we now are going through this sort of, you know, evolutionary period. We are Renaissance time here in Greater Lafayette, where there's a lot of construction going on.
I've noticed that, Mayor.
And people call up and complain about traffic jams.
Yes.
And there's a real difference between a traffic jam in Greater Lafayette and a traffic jam in Chicago. You can age in a traffic jam in Chicago.
You know, I'm not going to disagree with you there. I was up there a couple of weekends ago, and I have a knack for heading up there to visit friends mm-hmm. when a big event is happening. And mm-hmm. once you hit downtown, you could have 5 miles left on your journey, and you're going to sit there for an hour. And you know what? You have to go to a Zen place and just accept what's happening to you.
But the Zen place, unfortunately, is in that car, in that traffic jam. So
exactly.
It just starts off on the wrong. So being here for such a short period of time, do you think that this is a place you could call home, or do you want to be in a
Absolutely.
Bigger city environment?
I mean, I think it just takes a little while to get used to being anywhere. I've definitely mm-hmm. found that. And I have family living, because I grew up in Indiana. So I have family that lives in Indianapolis and Greenwood.
Good.
And I have a brother and a sister who both attended Purdue.
Did you go to Purdue?
I did not. I went to the University of Evansville.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I'm still an Indiana girl. Yeah. I just haven't lived here in a long time. So it's certainly been nice to come back.
I did some graduate work up in that area.
Okay.
Years and years ago. So that's a cool place.
All right. Now I'm going to segue back. I've now been interviewed, mm-hmm. and now we're going to turn it back to asking the mayor.
Yeah, I guess it's not the mayor asks, it's ask the mayor, right?
So, you were just telling me that you're going to be taking a trip to Aruba.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah.
Because which birthday is this, Mayor? You can share that information.
It is my 21st.
Congratulations.
Yeah, times three, actually. Now, a group, it's really strange. I grew up, you know, I've lived here forever, but anybody mm-hmm. that's listened to this show for the years that we've been doing it knows. I grew up in West Lafayette. We moved here back in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through the school process from kindergarten all the way through high school with the same group of guys.
Oh, wow.
And oddly enough, all of us turned 60 this January.
That is just wild to
me. Isn't that bizarre?
That has to be like a statistic. Aberration or something.
I mean, we're all developmentally immature, but unfortunately we're getting towards close to that Social Security age. But
mm-hmm.
So we decided, well actually we didn't, our wives decided to make our 60th birthday special.
Mm-hmm.
So they have planned a trip for us to go to Aruba during the month of January, because that's when we all turn.
That's definitely the time to go to Aruba,
yeah,
I'd
and
say.
There's a place like it's Turks on...
Turks and Caicos?
That place, yes.
Yeah, that place.
So that's kind of near that general vicinity, isn't it?
I believe you. Yeah, I don't have a map in front of me right now, but I'm nodding
actually,
and saying,
once
yes,
again,
they're nearby.
You know, we failed geography, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we were obviously still very close and very much in touch, me and all the guys. And some of them even listen to this radio. So sure, if you're listening out there, make sure your bags are packed.
Exactly. You know? Make sure that you have plenty of sunscreen for those
sunscreen.
hot sun rays. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So listeners, also remember you can call in questions right now by dialing 765-496-1999. Again, these questions are for the mayor and not for me. You can also send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet a question to our Twitter account, and that's @WBAA News on Twitter. So Mayor, it's August. Hard to believe school is already about to get going again.
I know. It just seemed, actually, there was, I think Noblesville started to school this week.
Mm-hmm. So I believe West Lafayette's school corporation starts on Tuesday.
Yep.
So it is that time of year.
Yeah.
And this past year, to get serious, was marked by multiple school shootings, including, of course, one right here in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And schools have been able to request handheld metal detectors from the state. Those are supposed to arrive, I believe, sometime in mid-August. I don't have an exact date for you. But what is the latest that you know of on West Lafayette schools accepting or wanting those handheld metal detectors?
Well, I know that they're interested. I have a very good relationship with the superintendent, Dr. Rocky Kay, and he's a good friend of mine. He's also a motorcycle guy, so
we
have that going for us as well. And I know that's something that they're very interested in, and they are going to proceed as cautiously as they can. One thing that we often get into when we talk about schools and school protection and things like that is there are folks that feel that schools are institutions of learning,
right?
In some cases, higher learning, obviously. And there is that delicate balance of trying to be safe and then trying to make sure that there isn't an environment that generates fear. Way back in my police career, I had the opportunity to work in the Lafayette School Corporation. I did some security work in the Lafayette School Corporation. And back in the late 80s and early 90s, the issue was we want a police presence, but we don't want it to be a police state. We don't want to generate that unfortunate negativity that some of the students, and in some cases some of the teachers and parents, might have if they see an armed officer in the hallways of their school. Because crime prevention obviously is 90% in someone's mind. If they see a police car or a police officer somewhere, you know, there's a statistical reality that the propensity of somebody committing a crime is greatly reduced. But it also generates that concern of, why are you here? You know, what is it we need to be alerted to? So when we talk about school security, and we talk specifically about the threat of guns coming into school, schools have done a great job since Columbine, since some of the tragedies that we've had through our history now when it comes to dealing with our children in schools, on how to prepare. A lot of it has to do with how we train our students to respond to that, because we have to face it. It's just like the tornadoes of, well, probably not your generation, but of mine.
Well, so here's a question, and this just popped into my head because I was reading something about this the other day. For example, I used to work at a school, and after Sandy Hook, we began engaging in monthly
drills. Sure.
But can that kind of student preparation, if, for example, that's what you might be talking about, can that be a little traumatizing too? Is all of this a little traumatizing maybe?
It could be. But I mean, think back to the day with the bigger threats of the unknown. We used to have these tornado drills. Not so much in my time, but in my brother and sister's time, they used to do the duck and cover with a nuclear threat. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, back in those days, the questioning of the reasoning behind something wasn't really relevant.
Right.
You just did it. You know, if something bad was going to happen, this is what you do because we want you to make sure you're safe.
Yep.
Now we're more interested in why. And because of the access, and I'm holding up my little lunar space device here, my cell phone, because the access to immediate information and most kids now being able to access that when they're 6 or 7 years old, I think it's imperative that we provide that kind of guidance to our kids and to our students if we're in a teaching zone. I know, but I did actually, I used to be adjunct faculty at Ivy Tech, and I taught classes there. And that was when we had that first gen of the potential of horrific things happening in an academic environment, in an enclosed academic environment. And I'll never forget, after I finished teaching one day, and it was oddly enough, I was teaching a criminology course. When I finished teaching, one of the students came up and had a backpack, and he was kind of an older student. He was probably in his 30s, maybe.
Okay.
I had a backpack. And he says, hey, you know what? He says, you don't need to worry about anything happening in class here. And I'm like, how come? He said, and he did this. He patted his backpack. And I said, what do you got in there? And he opened it up. He had a small handgun in there. And so we had to go and take the appropriate action. And again, this was in a time when things were different.
Right.
So we have progressed, unfortunately, on either side of the spectrum when it comes to things like that. But when it comes to our students here, back to the topic, talking about having some form or some protocol, I think it's an unfortunate reality. Because anymore, it used to be if a parent wanted to visit their child in school, they could walk in any door.
Now that is certainly no longer the case, right. Yeah.
It used to be if a parent wanted to take their child out of school, they could do the same thing and they could leave with their child. Now you can't anymore. So this, I think, is an unfortunate reality of the sign of the times. I think that we live in a world now where you can't be too cautious. There are discussions now about how schools can better detect that type of circumstance. There are, in the counselor's office, that the kids are encouraged, if mommy and daddy are having issues, if something like that happens at home, the kids are encouraged to report. Not necessarily to have any kind of enforcement action taken, but so that there would be a level of awareness on the part of the administration and the teaching staff. But probably more importantly, schools now are being designed with security as a major concept of the design plan. That could be automatic locking doors. That could be, you know, having, and I'm only speculating here, but bulletproof glass in the classroom doors, things like that.
So if Westford, for example, if West Lafayette is considering these handheld metal detectors, they're still kind of in the process of thinking about it. Other schools have already said, mm-hmm. yes, we're going forward with this. And so what do they have in place right now? Are you able to speak to that at all?
Well, I know that we have a physical presence at our schools. The West Lafayette Police Department has a great working relationship with the West Lafayette Community School Corporation, and we have officers on site. They screen. There is an officer that there's only one point of access and egress, and I can only speak to the high school about this, and right. I think Cumberland School is the same way, mm-hmm. Of getting in and out. So, and again, there's an officer that sits there and has eyes on contact with the people that are coming and going, specifically when class is in session. And then I believe that the teachers are getting some instruction in regards to potential threats.
So I guess a bigger question, and I feel like this has come up a lot for me for some reason this year in the course of my reporting, and I understand part of the reason we're having this conversation right now is that these shootings we're talking about happened at schools. Mm-hmm. Are schools supposed to be all things to everyone, if that makes sense? It sounds like we're basically saying the school is responsible for every single aspect of a child's well-being. Mm-hmm. Their physical safety, but then maybe also their mental health mm-hmm. and well-being and mitigating some of the challenges that come up with that some people suggest might lead to, mm-hmm. you know, the child bringing
Big
the gun.
And,
yeah, exactly.
There is. I mean, we have now, there is, history is identified sometimes by really cool things that happen and sometimes by really bad things that happen. And we're living in one of those little ebbs where a lot of bad things are kind of dictating what we are doing as a culture, at least in America, in some cases around the world. And, you know, I have a 2-year-old grandson, and I worry about my 2-year-old grandson But like a grandparent, I worry about him falling downstairs. I mean, he's a really active guy, and he runs at 50 miles an hour. He doesn't walk
anywhere.
They
always do.
They just fly all. So I worry about him. My daughter and I ride motorcycles together. I worry about her on her motorcycle. So, I mean, we sort of gear a lot of what we do based on what might happen. In schools now, I think that we're looking at about this with a little bit more focus. It's not what might happen. It's when this happens, how do we respond? If this event happens, how do we respond? It's back to the old tornado drill thing that we used to have when we were little kids. And I think when we talk about the potential of having somebody that enters the school without the authority to do so with the intent to do some type of harm, whether it be to one person or to many people, I think there needs to be some instruction on how to respond. And I think that the schools are taking that threat seriously. And I know in here in West Lafayette, we're working cooperatively with them to make sure that we get that information to the necessary people.
Okay. And sort of related to this topic as well, last year also then saw a significant number of student-led protests and marches and events, and that includes here in West Lafayette, especially in the wake of the Parkland shooting. I know I saw you at the West Lafayette High School event, which I said just said last year. That was just this past spring, actually. Yeah. And there's certainly been discussion over time about that spirit of activism, was that going to last through the summer break and still be a presence in the upcoming school year? Mm-hmm. And I don't know what you think about that. And then how do you – I've had some conversations with school officials, with teachers, with counselors about how do you handle that going forward if there is a new normal? Do you let that protest happen every single time? Do you do you empower them to feel like they can do that? How do you decide what's important and what's not under those circumstances?
That's one thing that's really cool about our school corporation. The students and the parents, the teaching staff, the administration encourages that kind of involvement. I mean, let's face it, you know, there is no such thing as an experience. Everything we do nowadays is a learning experience. And I think that that translates very clearly to not just our high school and grade school students, but also to our college students as well. As luck would have it, we're having this conversation at a very appropriate time. At our council meeting on Monday, we're actually going to have a resolution in regards to issues involving guns, gun rights, and what we believe to be a basic resolution supportive of the Second Amendment, but also asking that we take it just maybe one step further in regards to background checks, making sure that guns don't get into the hands of the wrong people, making sure that when we talk about semi-automatic and automatic weapons, that we have some common sense about that. And I couldn't be further, I mean, more strongly supportive of that. And we will have at this council meeting some really credible speakers that are going to address this issue, as well as me. Not necessarily.
You are a very credible speaker, man.
Thank you very much. But yeah, and one of them is actually going to be a student, one of the students that was involved in organizing the rally that we had at the high school last year.
Well, and I'm glad you brought this resolution up. What prompted that? What brought that together?
There is an amazing woman in our community. Her name is Kathy Parker. And Kathy, if you're listening, yes, I did say amazing. And she is involved in a group called Moms Against Gun Violence, and it's a nationally recognized group. It was a group that was organized after one of the early school shootings, and it has a very strong national presence. There have been a few rallies around town here over the past couple months. We had one over in Lafayette, and we all have the bright orange T-shirts that we wear and stuff like that, so we're readily identifiable. And the whole point is that they're not asking to repeal gun laws. They're not in opposition to the Second Amendment. They respect the Second Amendment, but they do believe that the Second Amendment, like all things that happened a couple hundred years ago, need to be applied towards a reality of life now. And they are very concerned about what could conceivably happen if all restrictions on weapons are removed. And irresponsible ownership and irresponsible storage of guns and having guns in a situation to where even the most untrained user can still create havoc because they can pull one trigger and generate so many rounds in a very short period of time. And it's a very passionate group. and they have done amazing work, like I said earlier, in our community and actually in communities around the country. So I think that that is one of the shining stars of what we are looking at now culturally. You know, we are realizing, and we're doing it with not with a shrill voice, we're doing it with research, and we're doing it with a practical step-by-step approach to see how we can improve not just the perception of safety, but the reality of safety for our communities, for our kids, for our schools. You know, let's face it, any group gathering now, whether it be in a religious setting, in an academic setting, at a sports event, there has to be measures taken in the event of that horrific happening. And again, going back to the days when I wore a badge and carried a gun, that was the very early stages of, and most specifically at Purdue games, you know, like football and basketball games, where we had to start looking at having what we used to call takeout teams.
Okay.
Where we used to be prepared for something really bad happening. And then after 9/11, everything really changed. Because there was even a greater concern. So it's unfortunate that we live in these sort of times. But again, you know, as community leaders, as people that have, you know, in some instances, the public ear, I think that we need to act responsibly and make sure that, you know, what we do with the authority given with us isn't trying to banish existing law, isn't trying to mess with the Constitution, but to make sure that we do things in a way that's going to ensure what we have now, the modern threats of now, it empowers us to be able to deal with it reasonably.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. Thanks for being with us. We have a few minutes left. You can still call in your questions by dialing 765-496-1999.
Wow, this has gone by really quick.
Hasn't it, Mayor? You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. I'm going to switch gears here. This past weekend, as you know, a synagogue was vandalized in Carmel with anti-Semitic graffiti. And seeing that news, it's really hard not to remember what happened here in West Lafayette earlier this year when banners were covered in racial slurs and threatening language. Hung outside a church. And at the time, you spoke pretty directly about how you felt about that. I'm sure you recall.
Yes, I am the first mayor in at least Indiana to get credit with using the F-bomb in the newspaper.
You
Thank
did.
You, Mr.
You said how you felt.
Yes,
you
and I prime, often do.
And maybe how other people felt as well. You gave voice to feelings. So Governor Holcomb has announced, you know, support for hate crimes legislation now in the 2019 session in the wake of this incident. Again, as a reminder to everyone, Indiana is, you know, one of only five states without such legislation. So I guess my first question is, do you think, I'm thinking of these specific types of incidents.
Sure.
Do you think this type of legislation, you know, is a deterrent for that person who's standing there with the can of spray paint in their hand, getting ready to do something like what happened here or what happened in Carmel?
No.
Okay, so can we talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And the only reason why I'm saying no is because I've done this before. I was actually one of the lucky guys that had to work the Klan rally that happened here about 25 years ago.
Okay.
I was one of the, they used to call us spotters, and they put me into the crowd, and I get to walk around amongst all these jerks and listen to their venomous poison that they're spewing out and basically make sure that, again, back to the gun thing, that nothing really bad's going to happen. But the only reason why I said no is because these people are cowards. These people are mental midgets. These people are the type of and I use the term human loosely, that don't have that same structure that you and I would have. You know, they do things not with the understanding of what happens in the event that they should get caught. They do things under the guise of anonymity in such a cowardice way that they won't. You know, it takes no courage and it takes no intellect to be able to spray paint something as repulsive as a swastika on a synagogue's trash retention area. It takes no courage or any intellect at all to have a venomous hate sign draped over the fence of a church. It just takes a coward. And they don't process things like we do. They don't look at cause and effect. They only look at things from the point of trying to prove either some completely archaic, offensive, repulsive agenda, or trying to get attention, maybe to get a girlfriend or something. Who knows? But entering into their mind really doesn't really function that way. Now, having said that, they generally do these things cautiously. You know, they probably wear gloves, so there's no DNA on anything that they might touch. They take the paint cans and things. Usually they take them with them, so there's no print evidence. So they do make steps to make sure that they don't get caught. But I wouldn't give these animals credit with having that kind of intellectual capability.
So what can the legislation accomplish? Is it, everything. I mean, is it important? Is part of it just this is the right thing to do and well, this shows support to people even, who need this kind of protection?
I mean, let's talk about Indiana in general. I mean, I've lived in Indiana all my life for the most part. And Indiana is a great place to grow up. It's a great place to raise a family. It's a great place to get an education. But there are gaps. I mean, in northern Indiana and southern Indiana might as well be on different parts of the hemisphere. They're very different communities. And I think that there is a tug of war about the rights of the human versus the rights of the collective body. And I think that Governor Holcomb is trying to unify those two groups in a very, 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 very delicate way. He's taking the small steps to get there. But we need to get back on track. We need to realize that living in fear, nobody should have to do that. We need to realize that people that spew that type of hate, whether it be on a trash can or whether it be on a banner, you know, in the woods somewhere, need to be called out and punished. And should they get caught, there needs to be laws that will really make somebody think twice before they would ever do that again.
I guess another thing I've been thinking about, you know, there was a real outpouring of shock and anger, support from the community, and then the sound and the fury kind of fades away. Mm-hmm. Are we just going to keep being shocked by these things happening, especially here in Indiana, over and over again? You know, when do we learn our lesson, essentially?
I can't speak to the entire state, but I know right. What we do here in West Lafayette. And I know that in West Lafayette, we take every moment, no matter how horrific it is, we use it as a learning moment. You know, parents talk to children about it. They talk about it in church. They talk about it at the synagogue. They talk about it on the street. They talk about it at our council meetings. And again, thanks to the local media, it doesn't just die on the vine. We have continuing conversations about it. And again, I apologize for being so profane, but it really affected me personally.
Absolutely.
And again, having the history that I had doing some of the undercover work that I did, I see how this stuff happens. And I see how if we don't have an immediate and a strong and a very public reaction to this, it's going to reoccur. And again, our feelings are more important in some cases. Again, we're talking about to a specific group than what the law may or may not do to them. And another thing to consider is that as we evolve, as we move further down the road, there will be more opportunities to generate messages of hate. And unfortunately, there seems to be a lot of that coming from a much bigger public office than local offices. And so we need to be aware that, you know, we need to communicate the message of love and not let hate be a driver for what we do around here.
Okay. And kind of a quick little final note here.
How much time do we have left? Because I don't know what quick means.
I think we have 30 seconds. Is there any progress on the investigation that is happening?
No,
with the
We sent everything down to the lab and they were able to get some evidence off of it. But again, the presumption is that if you have like fingerprints or DNA that you can immediately catch somebody. But if they're not in a database, then we have nothing to compare them to. So hopefully it'll be there. And should something come up that we can use as a comparative, or if there's a match, then we'll obviously have who we need.
Okay. Mayor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Job,
that's
rookie.
Our time for today. Thank you so much. You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. And you can send us all of your questions at ask@WBAA.org or tweet us at WBAA News. That's our Twitter handle. Thanks for listening and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.